Welcome to Red Tent Radio with Ludwina Dortovic. This is the radio show that helps small business owners with creative marketing ideas, time-saving tips, and business insights that will increase your profile and attract new clients. If you are serious about your business, if you're ready for the success you know you deserve, then stay tuned for a wealth of information. Now here's your host, Ludwina Dortovic.
Hello and welcome to Red Tent Radio, the small business radio show helping you bring your business to life. I'm Ludwina Dortovic, your host, and welcome to episode 29. Now, could your business be a franchise? Today we're talking to Brian Keane from Franchising Made Easy. Brian is a franchise specialist who helps small business owners take their business model and get it franchise ready. It's a unique service that will save you a lot of the high cost that's usually associated with franchising, and it will equip you with the resources you need to do it yourself, along with a little bit of hand-holding from Brian. We'll also be talking to Aaron James Lee in our Social Media Matters segment. Aaron will be showing us some interesting and fun ideas that you can incorporate into Facebook that will hopefully make your fans engage and connect more with you. And now it's also going to be our last segment with Aaron. We will be incorporating some new segments into the show over the next few weeks to keep it fresh and interesting for our listeners. Now, we've been really grateful to have Aaron's segments on the show and want to thank him, profoundly thank him, for his contribution. Now, I'm also starting a new segment this week. Each week from now on, I will be recording a short interview with a business-to-business resource, product, or service that will help you in your day-to-day operation of your business. But we need your insight. We're not quite sure what to call the segment, so we'd like to hear some ideas from you. Now, please go to our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/theredtentwoman. And right there, you'll find a post where I'm actually asking you what you think that we should call it. Now, the winner will receive a free copy of my ebook, The Recession Proof Marketing Guide. So today, I'm kicking off this new segment with Sue Murphy from Red Hot Events and Seminars. Now, Sue will be talking about how she can help you better promote your events and workshops. So if you run workshops, teleseminars, webinars, any kind of events, you don't quite know how to get the leads to your events or how to get bums on seats, then Sue is the girl to talk to. Now, we will be looking for future guests for this particular segment of the show. So if you think that you would be ideal for it, then please go along to redtentradio.com and head over to the guest FAQ page. All the information that you need to apply will be right there. Now, what's been happening in my business? Well, for me, it's been time to review my website. I do this about every 6 months or so that I can make sure that it's up to date, simple, relevant, and easy to navigate. Now, I've noticed as things have changed in my business that my website navigation has become a little complicated. So I've been working diligently on restructuring it so it's a lot easier to find what you're looking for. Now, it's a good thing to do every now and then because we can become a little bit too close to our websites, particularly if you are the one that's creating and adding content on a regular basis. Now, we're going to be talking about websites quite a bit in the next few episodes, but while I'm on the subject, I have a complete website analysis service that I offer my clients that will assist you with finding the problems in your website, discovering the pearls that will attract more visitors, and show you how to get high-quality backlinks so Google will index your site. Now, to find out more about this service, go over to theredtentwoman.com.au and then head over to the services page where you'll find the website analysis tab. I have done this service for quite a few of my clients before who have found it incredibly helpful. It's exhaustive. I do actually look through a lot of different areas of your site. I look online as well to see who's linking to your site. I look at the content on your site. I look at your keywords, your SEO. I look at your graphics even. There's a whole bunch of things that I look at from the outside in where I've got a really fresh perspective for you so that you can see what it is that you need to change on your site. I do offer you insights and advice on what it is that you can do there as well. Now, I'm pleased to say that we have some dynamic guests booked for future episodes. I'll be interviewing the CEO of QuickFlix in a few weeks and the CEO of Green Share Car. They're both incredibly innovative national organisations that I'm sure will be able to provide you with some incredible business insights and advice. So let's get on with the show.
Social media matters.
So I'd like to welcome back for the final time, so it is a little bit sad, but I'd like to welcome back Aaron James Lee for our Social Media Matters segment. Thanks for joining us, Aaron.
Hello, Ludwina. It's not sad. I'm not really going anywhere completely. I'm just going to be working more in the background, so that will free me up to do a lot more behind-the-scenes work. So.
Yeah, I know. But it has been absolutely wonderful having your contribution on the show and your sense of humor and your energy. So on behalf of all the listeners, I just want to thank you very, very much for all of the segments you've done now for, gosh, it's been nearly 30 episodes. So thanks so much, Aaron.
Well, thank you. I tip my hat to you, Ludwina.
Okay, great. All right, so let's get started. What are we talking about today?
Okay, today I thought for my last Social Media Matters segment, I'd kind of make it a little bit fun. And in that respect, I thought we would talk about Facebook as far as posting. Now, we've mentioned this from time to time, but I think one thing that a lot of people have an issue with is, oh my gosh, I really should post something today. So what should I post? So I thought I would give people some fun ideas to engage the followers of your Facebook page, that you can do stuff that's not just business, but it kind of, you know, mixes it up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea because I know I need a little bit more variety as well in the way that I post. So what have we got for our first tip?
Okay, the first one is when you post a picture, make sure that you tag the people in the photos. Like if you take a picture of somebody that comes into your store or at a convention or networking event, because when you do that, their friends will see those photos too. So you might drive new members to your fan page because they've seen their friends in photos that you posted. So don't forget to tag people in the photos that you post.
That's a really good idea. Okay, what's next? Mm-hmm.
Okay, how about asking a guest to post on your page for a day or even an hour, somebody who's a celebrity or an influencer or another company executive, to take over your Facebook page and answer questions that people have. And you can also kind of make teasers for even a week leading up to that, saying, next Tuesday we're going to have so-and-so on the page, so make sure you come, so it gets people excited and it gets people to your page.
Aaron, that is a brilliant idea. I have never thought of that. That is fabulous. So almost like you could have, like, that is a really great idea. Aaron, I love that. So you could have one day a week, which is just specifically, and everybody knows it, that it's your celebrity.
Right.
That is really good. I might actually, I like that. I think I'm going to incorporate that into the show. That is brilliant. Thank you very much.
Well, you're very welcome.
Oh, I like that. Okay, what's next?
Okay, the next thing is host a caption contest. You know what a caption is, right? When you have a photo and you put a caption underneath of it, like they do in newspapers and stuff. Well, another thing when you post photos is, let's say this would work great for you, Ludwina, when you have a networking event, you have pictures, I know, that you post all the time to your Facebook page. Have people get involved and ask them to come up with their best caption ideas. And you can even run a little contest around it. It doesn't have to be a prize necessarily, but it'll bring people coming to the page to see all the ideas that people have come up for the caption ideas too.
That's another good idea too, because there's a magazine, I can't remember which one it is, in Australia where they'll have a photo of a celebrity or something who's been caught in some kind of, you know, weird expression on their face, and they get they get people who read the magazine to send in, you know, a caption, and it's interesting what they end up writing, and you know, these people end up obviously getting printed in the magazine and winning a prize or something. So that's really good. You're on a roll today, mate. What else have we got?
I'm trying. Don't forget to ask for ideas from your followers. What would you like to see next? What would you like for us to discuss?
So I can ask ideas from followers. Okay, so what's next?
Okay, one thing is sometimes it's just those little things. All good businesses should have a newsletter. Don't forget to post those links to your Facebook page. Sometimes even some of my favorite newsletters will get slipped through the cracks because I just don't see it that day. And a couple days later, it's not on my screen anymore. So don't forget to put those links on your page so that people will remember, oh, that's right, there's a newsletter out.
Oh, okay. So what you're saying then is on your Facebook business page is to post the link to your newsletters. That's great, and I haven't done that in a while. I remember you suggested that to me ages ago, and I started doing that because I can actually link up where my newsletter is saved on my website and then just add that link to Facebook. So that is a really good idea.
Everybody should always post their newsletters also online too as well.
Yes. You know, if you're not sure how to do that, then find out from your webmaster how it is that you can get the link where your newsletter is actually saved within your website system. And one thing you've mentioned recently, Aaron, is that, you know, your newsletter, you should also save that online as well so that you can actually get a link for it, because otherwise it's just an email template or something. So if you can save your newsletter online, you should be able to get a link for it. Oh, the other thing they could do, remember when the tip that we mentioned last week, they could register their own domain name, so for me, LudwinaNordovic.com, and then they can add their newsletters to that site as well. Okay, what's next?
Final idea for this last Social Media Matters segment is, Ludwina, have you ever seen those? It's kind of like a game that I used to play it as a kid, but I still like it as an adult, where people show you a picture, and it's a picture of something that's really highly close up, and they say, can you guess what this is? And it turns out being like the bottom of a sneaker.
Okay, yeah. Or maybe it's a portion of somebody's face, and you've got to guess who the face belongs to.
Right. It's a mystery photo is what they call them. Well, how about taking one of your products and doing a super, super high close-up, posting that to your Facebook page and having people guess which of your products it is?
Aaron, oh my gosh, why are we making this the last segment? That is brilliant. I love that. Yes, I think I'll have you back as a guest every now and again. I think that that's a great idea because I could pop up, say, one of my ebooks, and then I have to pick out which one it is, and then whoever picks it wins it.
There you go. You can run a contest around it, or just something for people to have fun, because when you have stuff and content, it's all about content when it comes to social media because you need people to have a reason to come back to your page. So we all like to have fun, right? So when you have things that people can have fun with, they're going to remember, hey, I haven't been to Red Tent for a couple of days. There's always so much fun going on over there. I'm going to pop over and see what's going on today.
Yeah. That's a good idea, and I'm really glad that you sort of brought that aspect of light and fun to it, because I think that, you know, business can be so serious sometimes that we just forget to sit back and have a laugh. So thank you so much for those tips, Aaron. And again, Aaron, on behalf of all of our listeners, we just want to give you a big hug from all the way on the other side of the world. Thank you so much for all of your fabulous contributions to the techie segment that we started with and now with Social Media Matters.
Thank you very much, and I'm still going to be around. I'll just be more in the background.
Yeah, I know. And all of the segments that Aaron has done are going to be available in our free resource center on our site, which we should be launching next week. So you can still listen to all of the past episodes from Aaron. If anybody would like to find out some more information about Aaron, you can find him at aaronjameslee.com. So thanks again, Aaron, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Ludwina. It's always a pleasure.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Well, now I'm going to be having a chat with Sue Murphy from Red Hot Events and Seminars. Now, Sue's from the lovely northern part of Australia up in the Sunshine Coast. Well, welcome to the show, Sue.
Thanks, Ludwina. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah. I'm quite excited to talk to you about what it is that you do, because I think it will be an incredibly useful resource for small business owners. So essentially, the service that you provide is called Promotions and Events Resource Network. So tell me what it is that that means.
Well, what I like to do is help predominantly small business owners to get their message out to the world, because most of them have a great business. They have a lot of passion for their business, but what they struggle with is really marketing and promoting themselves. So that's where I come in and teach them how they can do that effectively and usually at a very low cost or no cost.
Okay, so what kind of events are you talking about?
Well, the people that come to us are very much small business owners, very micro businesses, and they are people that are running workshops, whether they're local. We deal with people all around Australia, all different ranges from very large events, but very much about helping the small business owner. And these are often women, especially mums that have been working from home and are now developing workshops that they want to really start to leverage what they do and get themselves out there more. So usually around 20 to 50 people, a size event, and helping them to really get their message out there. We also help people running online events as well.
Okay, so it's you're not actually running the event for them as, say, like an event management company, are you?
No, I definitely don't want to do that. My business is very family-friendly, lifestyle-based, so that I can work from home and leverage my time. So what I do is predominantly online and helping people through the online world.
Okay, so let's just say then that I'm about to put on a webinar, for example. What is it that you could specifically do to help me?
Well, what I can do is teach you. What I do is promote as well. So I can use my database and my connections on social media to promote what people are doing as well. But what I like to do is teaching people how to do it themselves, because what I've realized is when you're running your own event, you're the one with the passion and you know what it's all about. So it's very important for people to really use that passion to get their message out there. I don't really believe that other people can do it as good as you can yourself. So it's about rolling up your sleeves and getting yourself out there in the right way and doing it the most effective way that you can do it, so you can reach as many people as possible. So what I would suggest is various online techniques, and that can be things like blogging. Social media is fantastic for promotion. It's all free and it's extremely effective, especially because you can really tap into your target market through certain groups online, and things like Facebook, LinkedIn and Twitter are amazing for the actual response you can get from people that you're really searching to connect with. And also through other teleseminars, if you're running a teleseminar yourself, you can market that through other teleseminars, joint ventures with people, and listing your event on other networking sites. There's so many things that you can do, and we're just very much about teaching people what they can actually do, because a lot of people don't necessarily know this stuff. They've been busy working on their business. So we've got a few different products that we can do, or I can do for people, and that's through helping them even set up their own teleseminars. That can be a very effective tool to get your message out to the world easily, and also the potential to reach a huge amount of people is quite limitless. So that's easy once you know how to do it, but a lot of people get very scared of the technology side of it.
So I remember, and people might laugh now because I've got this global podcast show, but I remember way back having conversations with Janet Beckers, the darling from Wonderful Web Women, and she was holding my hand through my very, very first teleseminar. Now, I would consider myself, I'm a techie. I love technology. I love video. I love audio. I love all that aspect of it. But the thing that actually freaked me out about doing a live teleseminar was, what if the technology actually doesn't work? Well, I've got people live on the call, and I remember being really freaked out by that. And thank God for Janet at the time, who was able to help me to sort of, you know, understand the process and how it works. But I can understand for people who aren't technologically inclined, it can be quite an overwhelming experience.
Yeah, well, I learned from Janet too, and I was extremely nervous and scared when I first started as well, and I'm not very techie savvy at all. So for me, it was really scary, but I've been doing it now for a couple of years and I don't get nervous anymore. I actually really love it, but there is things that can go wrong, and for a lot of business owners, they just don't want the worry about to have the stress about that. So if what I offer is three different packages where I can actually just set up a call and they run it themselves, or else I can actually interview them, or else set up a call and they can promote that and do that themselves as well. So there's various ways that we can do it and just help people and take the stress out of it for them. And what they can do is then have the recording as well and do whatever they like with that as far as promotion goes for their events. And also there are other ways of doing teleseminars. You can pre-record them, which does take the stress out of it if things do go wrong, or doing a live call is perhaps a bit more stressful for some people, but it can also be more exciting as well.
Okay, so what are three tips that you can share with our listeners that would help them to become a little bit more confident about promoting and marketing their events?
Well, one of the most important things I'd say is don't spend a lot of money, especially on advertising, because that often doesn't work, and you can spend an absolute fortune. Just really source out some other ways that you can actually promote for next to nothing. And you can get free publicity, which I can certainly advise people on how to do that. And using the online world is just the best way because it is all free. And also joint venturing with other people. So people that are in your niche that are able to help you promote as well and you promote them. So it's called cross promotion. You know, there's nothing better than other people promoting you and speaking on behalf of you. So if you get other people out there spreading your message, that is very powerful.
Mm, definitely. And look, you know, to be transparent, that's part of the idea around this new segment on the show is to provide the kinds of resources that you yourself are actually offering other small business owners. But in return, you'll also be promoting Red Tent Radio to your database as well. So just to explain to people who are listening, essentially that's what a cross promotion is. So you can have a think about people that, you know, are in the similar industry or complementary, I guess, service to what it is that you're offering and say, well, look, if I'll do this for you, you do this for me. And that's essentially a cross promotion. So it's simple enough to do. So thanks for those tips. Now, Sue, how can people find out more about you?
Just go straight to our website, which is www.redhoteventsandseminars.com, and I've got everything listed on there. I can even do video creation, which is creating very short videos up to, say, 5 minutes long, helping people promote their events, and that can have a whole heap of graphics and photos from past events, or it's also a good way for a follow-up after an event just to keep the momentum going and to have people see what your event was about. So that's another way that we can promote for you as well.
Fabulous. Well, Sue, thank you very much for being on Red Tent Radio today, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thanks so much, Ludwina. It's been lovely.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye.
And now it's time for the featured interview.
Today I'm interviewing Brian Keane. Brian has 40 years experience nationally and overseas as a business owner and company director, focusing on business growth, particularly sales and marketing in the franchise industry. Now Brian's got years of franchising experience behind him, and now he's taken all that experience and he's developed a new franchise concept or business called How to Franchise Simply, which delivers the simplest step-by-step franchising system in a number of different media formats, including the internet. Now Brian is also the founder of Micro Loan Foundation Australia, a charity providing small business loans to impoverished women in Malawi. Now we love the sound of that. Welcome to Red Tent Radio, Brian.
Oh, hi. I'm really happy to be here. It's a good experience. Thank you, Ludwina. Thanks for the invite.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you for your persistence. I think we've been conversing now for a while over the last couple of months, so I'm glad that we finally got together. Now, I'm really interested in the topic that we're talking about today, particularly from the slant that you're coming from. Now, we'll get into that a little bit later, but franchising is a model that at times I have considered. I don't know if it's been sort of perhaps more on the slant of licensing versus franchising, and that's something I'd like to sort of get some clarity around today as well. What's the difference between those two? But when I've really put some deep thought into it, I thought, nah, it's too hard, there's too many complications, the process of it is really expensive, and it's not something that I've considered. So I really want to unpack the whole concept of franchising today, what it is, what it isn't, and how we can apply that to our business if our business would actually fit that type of model. So let's get started with defining exactly what franchising is.
Yeah, certainly. Essentially, there's three types of franchising, and it's important to understand this, then you get a better picture of what we're talking about. There's a manufacturing franchise, which is something like Coca-Cola, where they've got a product that they ship around the world, but they actually franchise to different companies in different countries the right to produce the product, bottle it, sell it, and so forth, and service it. So that's a manufacturing franchise. Then the other type of franchise you see is a product franchise. That, for example, the easiest explanation of one of those is a motor car dealership. Most of the motor car dealerships, you look at your Ford dealer down the road, they are actually a franchisee. And what Ford Motor Company do is produce the product, sell it through to the franchisee who's responsible for sales and marketing and service. So that's a product franchise. What we're talking about, generally speaking, with most of the businesses you see, is called a business format franchise. And that's a typical service business, retail business, can be professional, can be home cleaning, any range of items. But that's what most of the small business types are. There is some criteria to make a small business successful and what I would say to be eligible for franchising. Would you like me to go into that a little bit now or leave that till later?
Oh, yeah, no, we'll get into some of those details. I just really want to work on, at the moment, just really defining what franchising is. So there's obviously three different models there. So there's the manufacturing, for example, you gave us the example of Coke. There's products, which an actual physical product, and then a business type format, so like a clothing store, retail, or just a regular type of business. So how does franchising actually work? So what is the concept behind it that makes it different to, say, a regular business?
I suppose, well, number one, you're not in business on your own. And for someone looking at buying a business, the attraction to a prospective franchisee, and I might say the franchisor is the person who's developed and owns the chain, the franchisee is the person who buys a franchise. The franchisee is looking for a number of things, and one thing that appeals to them is the relative security, because the franchisor has developed this business often from a standing start. They've gone through all the blood, sweat and the tears. They've tried and tested lots of different things in different ways to make it successful. And along the way, they've probably wasted a fortune on advertising, on products that haven't worked and so forth. Once that's been done and the business has been proven, what they then do is produce, really systemize it so it's documented. And this means for the franchisee, he can refer to a set of manuals so that if there's something he's uncertain of, or particularly while he's learning the ropes about the business, he can look at it in a documented form. So he's got all those guidelines. So he doesn't have to reinvent the wheel. And then the other key one is the expectation of profit. Because if the business has been developed as a franchise, it's up and running, it can be shown in quite clear evidence that existing franchisees have a profitable business, then the person that's buying a franchise can feel far more comfortable than if they're starting off their own business from scratch, which we all know is a fairly speculative venture, unfortunately, for most people.
Okay, so it sounds like there's an aspect of security there then for somebody who's buying a franchise. So instead of, you know, somebody thinking, okay, I'm going to go out and start a business on my own, they may not have any business experience, but maybe have like an entrepreneurial seizure, as Michael Gerber calls it, and going out there and wasting years, time, money, getting stressed out, it's almost like they can just buy a business in a box, so to speak, and then all they've got to do is go out there and implement it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what it is, which is why it doesn't suit everybody, of course.
So what kind of restrictions are there around having a franchise?
There are some legal requirements from a franchisor's point of view. They have to make very broad disclosure about the business, and that's a requirement from the Australian Securities and Investment Corporation, ASIC. So there was legislation passed in the late 90s. So it requires a fairly extensive document which outlines the background of the marketing that's done, the franchisees that are in the system, any franchisees that have left, so information has to be provided. So it enables a franchisee coming in to better really scrutinise that system and understand exactly what's involved. So it highlights a lot of the key things which are in a franchise agreement, which in a franchise agreement are often difficult for a layman to understand.
What kind of guarantees are there in place that a franchisor can give to a franchisee?
That's an interesting one. Look, people do choose to give some guarantees, and it's obviously a great encouragement to people. If you're looking at buying, I mean, the first one I came across was Jim's Mowing when we helped him get set up in WA in the late 80s, early 90s, and he offered a guarantee then of $500 a week, which meant that somebody going for a small business, which in those days was selling for $12,000 to $15,000, including a trailer and a few mowers, it meant they felt comfortable about the amount of income they're going to get. They had a minimum threshold. Now, the franchisor has to cover for that. It's virtually an insurance policy. But it does mean there's an onus on the franchisor to make sure that he does provide the support, and in Jim's instance, the work, so that that franchisee can make an income.
Okay, so who holds the franchisor accountable then for their claims that they can make? Because I guess I'm playing a bit of devil's advocate here, and I'm sure they're the questions that a lot of people are asking as well. So these days, to buy a franchise, I guess it's somewhere, you know, depending on what it is, between $50,000 and $100,000 and possibly more. So if somebody's going in and investing that, then I guess that in my mind I would be thinking, all right, well then I can go in, as soon as I'm all set up and I'm trained, I should be able to make this kind of money each week if I implement their system. So I guess, how do you balance that accountability and that expectation with the franchisor to the franchisee?
Well, that's where it's important that the expectations of a franchisee are not exaggerated at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Because if it's a business that is starting off on a greenfield site, which is very common, particularly
in a greenfield
retail,
site is what?
A site where they've set up new.
Okay.
So they're not taking over an existing business. So let's say you were getting a house cleaning business, franchise, for your local suburb, and there was nobody else operating that franchise there, you've got to start from scratch. So the franchisor is going to help you, maybe letterbox drops, maybe mail outs, it may be telemarketing, those types of things, bit of advertising in the local newspaper. So it's going to take you time to grow the business. The other key element that attracts a franchisee is the support they get. A good franchisor will provide significant support and training. So you don't just get trained how to run your cleaning business, if we stick with that as an example. You actually also get ongoing support. So you'll be getting frequent phone calls, you'll be getting site visits, and you'll probably be getting retraining as well, so that the franchisor feels satisfied that he's scrutinizing your operation, so you're doing the job properly, and that in turn gives you as a franchisee the comfort that you are doing it correctly and that the franchisor is providing with that help to accelerate your growth over what it would normally be if you were out there trying to do it yourself.
Because I guess from the franchisor's perspective, which is the one who owns the whole franchise, they'd be very delicate about their brand, I'd imagine. So when a franchisee buys that, they're in essence another unit or an organisation out there that's representing that initial brand. So there would have to be some sort of, I guess, some strict criteria in there to make sure that that's respected.
There is, and in fact, one way I always suggest to people looking at buying a franchise or even thinking of franchising their business is go around and look at some of the businesses that are out there and just look at how well they are maintained. And you can see the good chains, franchise chains, from the more average ones, by the way they present their business, whether it's their van and the way it's sign written and how clean it is, or whether it's the coffee shop and how the store is presented, how the tables are kept clean and so on. So from the franchisor's point of view and the franchisees, they all have a common goal in maintaining that branding, because if you're in one suburb and adjoining suburb has got the same brand, let's say it's the house cleaning again, and they're not doing a good job, they're going to bring your brand into disreputation.
Definitely.
And so it's going to affect the franchisor and the franchisees and ultimately the resale value of the franchisees' businesses. It's written into all franchise agreements, that type of thing, but it's enforced like anything to different levels according to the commitment of the franchisor and how important the issues are.
Okay, so tell me then, how is franchising different from running a standalone business?
Okay, the biggest thing I think is that if you're running a standalone business, you've got to look after everything. You've got to keep your head out of the business, looking down the track to see what's happening, what new products you should be developing, working out marketing programs, all those types of things, looking at sourcing products and services. Whereas when you're a franchisee, the franchisor is completing those roles. So you're left to basically work in the business exclusively. And that means you're really getting that business tuned because you're putting all your efforts into it, as opposed to being distracted with all those other items that you need to pay attention to lest the business starts to fall away.
I like that. I'd never thought about it that way before.
So a franchisor goes through it's a bit heavily used these days, but a paradigm shift. if I could draw the analogy, because the franchisor starts off as a person owning a standalone business. Let's call it bricks and mortar, but it might be a cleaning business with a van. He may employ someone and have a second van, then decide he wants to grow more rapidly and decides to franchise it. What he has to become then is a leader and a manager as opposed to a technician. If we look in the classic sort of Michael Gerber type terminology, you've got the technician at the bottom level who handles the phone, puts the stuff in the bags, washes the floor, cleans the windows, serves the customers, unpacks the boxes, blah, 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 blah. Then you move up to the management level where you're starting to put systems in the business, and that's what is the process of franchising, is putting those systems in and documenting them. Then you move up to the next level where you're the entrepreneur. So basically the franchisor becomes very entrepreneurial, looking at the big picture, looking at what the potential is for the future, what extra added value they can bring in. The franchisees focus purely on sales. And when I joined franchising, I was amazed, having run my own businesses for a number of years, at how I could really work that business and be so much more efficient, to the point we were getting 20%, 25% more net profit in the business I was in those days, it was a retail bedding business, than the industry norm, because we were just running everything so damn efficiently, because we watched everything. Mm. Yeah, we watched every penny. Whereas when you're in a corporate business, or if you're in a business on your own and got other responsibilities, you don't have time always to put all those systems in so that it's really as efficiently run as it could be.
Okay, so would you say then that buying a franchise, a type of person who will buy a franchise would be somebody who may not necessarily have the entrepreneurial clout, but somebody who wants to be independent, have their own business, is just really good at doing the work, is passionate about the type of work that it is, so that they can then just concentrate on that and growing their business. And then the person who owns a franchise would be somebody who's more entrepreneurial, leader, can sort of think outside the square, good with marketing. Would you agree that that would be right?
Yes, yeah, that's a fair assessment. Although franchising breeds a lot of entrepreneurs as franchisees, because I think, again, of the example of the bedding group I was involved in, Bedshed, there were three people in the first seven or eight franchisees when the group started that became owners of quite large businesses, and they each developed franchise groups because they saw the way it could be done. They had their own ideas of different products, and they went out and did it from franchising, and they'd learnt about it on the coalface.
Mm.
And that's the other thing. A lot of people who may be entrepreneurial say, I'd like to go into a franchise, and then after a couple of years, I've learnt enough, and I'm going to start my own. So it's a way of getting a vast amount of experience without having to sacrifice, without taking the large risks.
Okay, so let's move on then. Let's talk about when do you know that franchising might actually work for your business?
Okay, you're going to do a little feasibility, really, and that probably means pulling in your accountant, or if you've got one on staff, or the accountant you use, you know, once or twice a year, and you need to put some figures together, because you need to determine that the business is profitable enough to be able to work out a structure where, I'm talking about this technician level versus the entrepreneur level, where you split the responsibilities, the roles of the business, into the two different departments, the franchisor and the franchisee. And what you're going to do is do some costings and look at that and make sure there's enough net profit so that both parties are going to be adequately rewarded. That is a litmus test, because not every business, by any manner, has got the margins to be able to afford to do that. But you need to be a little bit forward-thinking, because if you imagine you've got a home cleaning business, and at the moment you're paying $20 for a container of cleaning liquid, once you scale up, and if you've got 10 or 15 franchises, you can probably get a 30% discount on that product. And the same with other items, and you can rationalize all your marketing and your advertising. So as you grow, so the scale has a big impact. So you reach basically a threshold where you've got a critical mass, and that business is suddenly making a lot more money than you could ever have made as a standalone business owner.
Mm. Okay, so is there any particular type of business that is better suited to franchising than others? Because in my mind, I've always thought that franchising it's like the Fernwood gyms or the food outlets and the JA clothing stores and things like that. I've always seen it as a business model that works for bricks and mortar businesses. Is that true?
Sure. Oh, well, it certainly does work with bricks and mortar businesses, but it can work with almost any business you can imagine, providing you can create that structure where you've got the two levels of operation. And that's going to depend on the nature of the business. You know, the franchisor, for example, can choose to still do all the accounts for everybody, or he can let people do their own accounts. So there's a range of services and so forth and products that there's an option when you're designing the structure, and when you're looking at assessing whether your business is franchisable, these are things you'll be looking at. They don't take an enormous amount of research, but they are critical ones, and where you do need to get the opinion of someone that really understands the nuts and bolts of franchising.
Okay, so you talked before, you mentioned in my intro that you said that you can even develop a franchise around different sort of media type of businesses, including the internet.
Yeah.
So can you explain how that would work on an internet basis? Because when I think of internet and that kind of concept, I think of affiliate marketing. You give your product on sale to other people, they get a commission. I don't know how that would work in that realm.
Yeah, sure. Look, it depends on the sort of business. But one that I'm reviewing for someone at the moment, for example, is an online business. They provide a service to a group of retailers, right, in a particular industry. So they provide training and support and so on. The franchisor has developed this system. He's put lots of packages together, And at the moment, he's running the whole operation himself from New South Wales. What we're looking at him doing is actually franchising off each state so that he may still do the national marketing, but in each state, there's a franchisee who's responsible for sales, support, and training in that state. So they may well warehouse the materials that are involved, the training materials and so forth, and go and do the training programs and sell the franchises, sell the product. So the franchisor is just there to look at the big scale. Then he's looking at moving his operation overseas so that he's able to replicate that elsewhere.
Okay, so for example then, so I'm thinking in the realm of the Red Tent Woman. So
we provide
business coaching to people, we have online business resources, we've got the networking events. So if I was to consider, for example, franchising our concept, then I could have franchises in each state essentially doing what it is that I'm doing. They would own that business. I'd get a percentage of the profit share. I've just got to train them to do it in the way that we do it. They run it under the brand of the Red Tent Woman. I white label all of my training materials, I guess, or keep them as the Red Tent Woman training materials. How does that work?
Well, you know, there's no limit to what you can do. It's just a matter of working out what's practical and easy for you and also where you get value with the branding. So the big thing I was told by one of my early mentors was always have your business ready for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never know when the unexpected might happen. It may be somebody knocking on the door and saying, we love what you do, can we buy it?
Mm. So that's where systems come in place. And I always, always tell people, if you don't have operations and procedures manuals or anything written down for how it is that you operate your business, there's no point having it. Because, God forbid, you were laid out sick or even if you wanted to go on a holiday, you couldn't even operate your business without that, let alone wanting to sell that.
No, and in your instance, for example, you could franchise out to business coaches.
Mm-hmm.
In each state, quite simply. Mm-hmm. You may choose to still provide, you know, your radio programs and other high-level product, but you can just determine what you're going to scale off. The other thing you can do is, if we look around the world, is there's opportunities to franchise your concept elsewhere, particularly where it's a foreign language.
Mm-hmm.
So you may take your model and your manuals and your systems, and you may train, you could train people in France and Spain and Germany and wherever in your model. Because whilst you've obviously potentially got the whole world at your feet, it's subject to them being English speaking.
Okay, but how is that different to licensing? And that was one of the questions that I want to ask you. Tell me the difference between franchising and licensing. Because what you just explained to me, I would imagine that that's more of a licensing model.
Well, you can license it. And the essential difference is really, if there's in this country, I mean, the word license and franchise literally have always been interchangeable. Really, the definition of the dictionary means the same thing. But when we look at the Franchise Code of Practice, which is the ASIC regulations here, it's a little bit firmer. What it says essentially is, if you've got an ongoing relationship, you've got a marketing plan, and you've got ongoing fees together with branding, then essentially you've got a franchise. Now, and you've got a term. Now, if you give someone a license, your difficulty is controlling that license. In other words, the people can behave. You can't control their behavior in the same degree as you can with a franchise, because with a franchise, you start to incorporate all these controls and restrictions, which in turn have one very, very important element. When you've got a franchise with all those controls and those agreements and that brand, you've created something with vastly more value than you ever would do with a license, because a license is, the long-term value of it is very sort of grey, because you don't have the controls and the licensee doesn't have the same level of support and training from you. They're pretty much left to get on with their own devices, and very often licensing you'll see is done with products. You know, it may be that you've got a particular product that you produce. It might be a vacuum cleaner, and you give people a license to sell it in different territories, and you leave them to provide a training program. You may have a brand on the machine, but you don't control the way they sell it.
Or you might have a particular way that you coach. You might have a coaching program, for example, and 12-week coaching program. You write it, you create it, you sell it, people can put their own branding on it. So that would be like a license model.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And look, it's a little simpler to set up. And I suppose in a number of respects, you don't have the same amount of responsibility because you're not giving people the same assurances and the same commitment. So it's simpler. But the big difference is if you're looking to accumulate goodwill and capital value with your business, then that's where franchising is worth closely comparing, because you'll find you'll get much higher value from it. Of course, it's attractive to other people to buy.
Okay, so my next question then, the idea I have in my head that it's an incredibly expensive process, there's lots of legalities involved, it's like, oh my God, it's just such a big thing to consider. Overwhelming. Yeah. Big thing. Yeah. Now, is that true?
It is true, but it needn't be true. In other words, I suppose if I go back to Jim's Mowing, when we helped Jim get started off in the late 80s, it probably cost him $5,000 to $10,000, absolutely maximum. He set up a very simple little franchise agreement, which is about 15 or 16 pages. His manual was about 10 pages. It was very easy to do. So it didn't take him too many franchises to sell to recover what he invested. What's happened over the years, as has happened with most bureaucratic things, and particularly where the law gets involved, it's become far more complex. So you're absolutely right. And particularly since the advent of the Franchise Code of Practice, where there's much more information needs to be provided. But what's also happened, along with the days of QA and those sorts of things which came in with heavier systems, is that people tend to over-document and over-systemize, particularly small businesses, and especially when they get started. And you can understand why, because the consulting side has become the domain of the large legal groups and the large accountancy groups. They've got enormous overheads. You know, they're supporting staff in CBD, glass towers, and so forth. So their hourly rates are huge. Plus, they are at the point where they just their nature means they do everything in the finest of detail. So they just continue to add and add and add. So you end up with a ridiculously complex document and process, often for a very simple business which doesn't need it. Having helped lots of businesses franchise and franchised a number myself, that became very evident. So that was when I realized, sort of a bolt out the blue, and I was actually at an internet marketing conference just learning about it. And I thought, goodness me, we could package franchising so it's done a home study or business study sort of way, so that people get a number of units over, say, a 12-month period and do it themselves with some level of support. And that way you're able to dramatically reduce the cost. So it becomes quite viable for a small business again.
Obviously, this is what it is that you do, which is how to franchise simply. So I think we'll move on and we'll start talking about that now. How does it work? What's the cost involved? Is it how long is a piece of string sort of question, or?
Some elements of it, I suppose, are how long is a piece of string. But essentially, if you're looking at franchising a business out in the wide world, you're looking somewhere generally between $50,000 and $150,000 to do that, more often the upper end. With the model that we've provided, you can do it for probably around $10,000 to $30,000, depending on how complex the business is. And if we put in a buffer there for franchise agreements, I'd say you're looking at probably $20,000 to $30,000 is probably the range you can do it for today, which in current sort of, value terms, it's not excessive, bearing in mind you're expecting to sell, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5, maybe up to 10 over a 2 or 3 year period franchises, where you're going to be recovering part of that investment each time. Because that's the key. When you sell a franchise, you get a fee, and that is there to offset a lot of your capital expense as well as give you some extra profit.
How do you find your franchisees? How does that process work?
Yeah, well, I suppose traditionally franchisees have been found at franchise exhibitions, advertising in the weekend newspapers. You know, there are columns in the Businesses for Sale area, which is still quite good, but there's no doubt that there is a bit of a revolution. A lot of franchise businesses haven't tapped into it properly yet. Actually, marketing through the web with good SEO and good website and good processes and good conversion techniques, there's no doubt that that's the way to go for many businesses moving forward, you know, just using the amazing search engines that are out there these days. But there is a process. You do need to – people don't just walk up and give you a check. You know, you've got to take people through a process, just like you were building a house or you're buying a car. There's going to be, you're going to be making comparisons between one thing and another. You're going to be looking at what appeals to you. You need to be taken through that process to make sure that you've done your due diligence, that people are very, very well aware of what they're buying and so forth. And it's up to the franchisor, in my opinion, to make sure the franchisee doesn't come in and make a mistake because it's something that doesn't suit them.
Okay, I think now might be a good time. Have you got a case study that you could just briefly run over with us, like someone that, and what the business was, what you did for them,
sure.
And what the result was?
Yeah, by all means. Well, I'll give you a case study of one that's an Australian case study, one that I'm reasonably familiar with. Is a chap called John O'Brien. John was 20 years ago was in Canberra. He was a delivery man for Crystal Soft Drinks. That's part of Cadbury Schweppes. He moved into another area and started a little franchise group. And then in the mid-90s, he bought a small franchise in Hornsby called Pullworks, Pullwerx. And that business had been started by a fellow called Bob Bunning, who was retiring. John bought this. At that stage, he was probably late 30s. And he's expanded that business from Hornsby in New South Wales with three outlets to now having 300 vehicles on the road around Australia servicing people's swimming pools. So what he does is services the pools, repairs motors and so forth, supplies chemicals and so on. And he did that driven by his franchisees because the franchisees actually come up with a lot of ideas. Mm-hmm. The great thing is when you've got people working at the coalface, they're saying, gee, I could do this better. But if you've got 300 people saying, how can I do this better? You can imagine it's a constant brainstorm. And what he ended up doing was putting what he called hubs. So he's got about 60-odd hubs, which are retail shops, where five or six vans all come into as feeders. And those central stores, people can go and buy retail, but also the franchisees are based there. And what's happened is the franchisees with the vans have put their hands up and bought the hubs. So they've moved up a level. So the situation with John now is he's got businesses in Australia and New Zealand, 300 vehicles on the road, and 65 hubs out there at a very significant business.
Wow.
And the same concept, I mean, Jim's Mowing is the classic. It's a bit boring probably, but the reality...
Oh, everyone knows Jim's Mowing.
But, you know, he's got 32 different franchise systems now. 32.
Wow.
You know, he does electric tagging. He does tree trimming. He does house cleaning. He does a business that I started off a business called Ken Clean Window Cleaning. Brilliant business.
So what you're saying is he has a franchise that solely goes out and trims trees.
Yep.
That's it.
That's it.
They don't do anything else.
Yeah. No, that's it. And he's got Jim's Fencing, and he's got Jim's Bookkeeping. It's quite fascinating. If you want an interesting read about someone who came, he was an impoverished student in Melbourne studying history. He was doing gardening to survive, started doing lawns because he realised it was a lot easier. Then he realised that actually it was a lot smarter to give people a quote over the phone rather than have to go and measure up their lawn and quote them a price because he knew that every quarter acre block had a front and a back lawn. So suddenly he speeded up his whole process and he grew from there. He actually had to borrow the money. He actually went broke virtually when he first started. And now he's at the stage he's got a couple of thousand franchises.
Wow, it's an incredible story.
From a humble beginning. And the interesting thing is, most of the franchises you look at come from humble beginnings.
Hmm.
Something like, if you look at Hungry Jack's in Australia, Jack Cowan was a Canadian, came out here with his father, who was working for Ford Motor Company, I think, in Melbourne. In WA, he bought from North America the rights for Kentucky Fried Chicken. Started off from scratch. Now he's something like the 60th wealthy person in Australia. He owns Hungry Jack's, he owns Kentucky Fried Chicken in Western Australia, got a huge food supply business, he supplies numerous other franchise groups called Competitive Foods. These people have nearly all come from a standing start of one business when they got started in Subway. You know, Subway is the biggest franchise group in the world, bigger than McDonald's. 35,000 sandwich shops. And he was a student, and he started a sandwich shop. And it nearly went broke, and his advisor and business partner was a lecturer who said, you know, you need to grow. And he said, well, I can't, this is Fred Lucas, his name, he said, I can't afford to. He said, well, I'll put in 50%, open another shop, and he opened it not that far away. And the whole concept there was the success of Subway, that what I call the Olympic rings. If you put one comparatively close, not too close to the other, the brand is already known when you open the second one. So you overlap them slightly, the territories. And then you open the third one, which overlaps the first two. And that way, it's much, much easier to grow than it is to just stand off, start somewhere, you know, in oblivion, as it were. Oh. And so Fred's gone from a student with one sandwich shop to 35,000.
Oh, that's incredible. All right, so we've only got a little bit of time left. So before we wrap up, how about, why don't you tell us exactly what it is that you do for people when, you know, with your service of How to Franchise Simply?
Yeah, it's very simple. I run through a process. It's educational, really. Make sure they understand about franchising. We provide e-classes, 24 e-classes, so they get mentored through those. And that involves feasibilities, helping them design the model, helping them design their franchise or business, how they get a pilot up and running, how they recruit franchisees, and then how the business becomes sustainable in the long run as they transform through from being a business owner to being an entrepreneur and business leader. The amazing thing, I might just chip it in very quickly, is Price Waterhouse have just brought out some new figures for franchising in the last year, and it's actually grown at 17% in the last 12 months, totally contrary to the economic model of many, many businesses. In fact, the employment in franchising in the last 2 years grew by almost 40%, whereas if you look at things like the engineering and the manufacturing industries, they've been dropping rapidly. So franchising is no doubt about it, to my mind, particularly smaller franchises, is the way to provide employment and business opportunities going into the future, because it gives the return on the profit, because it's so efficient. It's just interesting. People wonder, you know, in these times, from my experience in 3 decades in franchising, when there's a downturn is when franchising thrives.
Is that true? Really?
Well, people look for security, and people say, I've had 3 jobs in the last 5 years. I'm fed up with getting shunted around. I'm 40. Let's go and run my own business. Or more and more what's happening now, there's a big move. It really is another big change in franchising, is that Gen Ys as well as Gen Xs are looking to moving into franchising. People are moving into it younger and younger. So there's a huge opportunity for, and particularly the biggest growth in areas we know, which is why I spoke to you and has been for several years, is women in business. And the opportunities for women out there in businesses is enormous. In fact, Nitwit was one of the first sort of high-profile franchise businesses in Australia. That was a woman running, training people how to run shops servicing the knitting industry, encouraging people to do their own knitting.
Really? How long ago was that?
Yeah. Oh, that was in the mid to late 80s. Oh, they had 60 or 70 shops, franchises around the country.
Teaching women how to knit.
That's right. Yeah, and then supplying all their wool and needles and all those sorts of things. So
that's fascinating.
So you can franchise literally anything, given that it's got the potential, you know.
Oh, that's incredible. So, Brian, how can people find out more about you?
Probably the easiest thing is to drop into the website I've got. I've actually got a workshop on next week, so it's promoting that at the moment. But there is a download. They can actually a free download of the 7 steps to how you franchise your business, which is basically the information I've collated together with my years of experience in what I think is a pretty fail-proof way of franchising a business. And it explains what it's all about, the steps you go through in order to avoid the pitfalls, so you can stand on my shoulders from the experience I've gained and avoid wasting lots of time and making lots of mistakes and so on. So it's howtofranchisesimply.com.au. So that's howtofranchisesimply.com.au. Or if you Google my name, Brian Keane, B-R-I-A-N-K-E-E-N, I've got a blog up there as well, which links through to it. But those 7 steps will give you a good bit of reading information, good general knowledge, certainly help you moving forward. And if you want feedback from there on, I'm always available for people to have a quick chat.
Fabulous. So just repeat that. So it's www.howtofranchisesimply.com.au. Is that right?
That's absolutely right.
Fabulous. Yeah. And make sure you go there to get the free offer that Brian has there. Well, Brian, thank you so much for your time today. I think we could probably talk for hours on the subject. It was quite fascinating. You've clarified a lot of things for me, and you've definitely got my brain thinking on what might be possible for the Red Tent woman. So thank you so much for your time today.
That's a pleasure. Nice to talk to you, and hope we catch up again.
Yeah, definitely. And,
thank you to all your listeners as well for the patience in listening. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Okay. Bye for now. Well, thanks, Brian Keane, for the in-depth look at franchising. Franchise laws are different from country to country, so make sure that you do check in your own home country for the current legal specifics. Now, if you'd like this episode and you would like to access past episodes, we have them available for instant download on our website at www.redtentradio.com. Please share our show on your favourite social media sites if you're enjoying it. We really do appreciate the support. Now, thanks for joining us, and I will see you next week. This is Ludwina Dordovic signing off. Bye for now.
You have just experienced another episode of Red Tent Radio. To find out more or to subscribe to the podcast, visit our website at www.redtentradio.com.